This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I'm here this week, as always, with my colleague Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there. Although I gotta say, like, lately, I'm just overwhelmed. I'm getting so stressed. I want to be like, that's it. I can't. I'm moving to Canada. I'm done. But anyway, it's just too much. It's been crazy. But this week we have a special guest to kind of help us unpack the crazy. He's joining us again, and I'm talking about attorney Qasem Rashid. And I'm so happy to have you back, Qasem. Thank you for joining us this week.
Always great to be back, Rabia.
Let me tell listeners a little bit about you. Qasem Rashid is an author. He's a human rights activist and attorney. He served previously as a national spokesperson for the Ahmadiyya Muslim community. And Qasem has authored three books, The Wrong Kind of Muslim, Extremist, A Response to Geert Wilders and Terrorists Everywhere, and Talk to Me, Changing the Narrative on Race, Religion, and Education. And I was happy to contribute to that compilation. And also, right now, many, many eyes are on Qasem because he is the Virginia State Senate District 28 Democratic nominee. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. I'm pretty excited about it. And we're going to win this thing, too. So that's
even better. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. How's it been in being switching to politics?
You know, it's for me, it's taking the advocacy that I've done and done with folks like yourself for so many years and shifting it into policy. And, you know, we see politicians kind of on a pedestal sometimes that right. They had to have some kind of special training or special experience. But really, it just comes down to caring about people. And so far, that's been a really good source for me to rely on as my go-to, that I'm doing this because I care about people and my track record proves it.
So did you always want to get into politics? Were you always interested in running for office?
No. And I think it's something that crossed my mind. You know, I was in college when 9/11 happened, and just kind of seeing where the country was going after that, you kind of suddenly realize that you suddenly speak for every Muslim in the world ever. And you start to think about what you're saying and how you're saying it. And you know, Rabia, we've talked about this before, right? That suddenly you speak for all Muslim women everywhere as well, by virtue of you being a Muslim woman. So therefore, naturally, you must speak for all Muslim women. And so just kind of seeing the rhetoric and seeing where things were going, I tried to, you know, brand myself as somebody who kind of live by example. And that's kind of where I've been focused on for the last some two decades. And I got to a point where we look at the state of our country, I'm not happy with it. And there's things I want to change. There's justice I want to fight for, things I want to uphold. And really, this was about taking my advocacy and turning it into policies to help and support marginalized communities. And I think that's why I'm in this thing. And that's why I'm going to stay in this and just talking to people in general and the frustrations they have. Not just Democrats, but Republicans as well. It's interesting how many Republicans voted for me in the primary because they're just sick and tired of it, and they can't do it anymore. And it's exciting for me that they're willing to switch teams because I think that's how we're gonna, you know, win hearts and minds and really have a robust conversation about what it means to be an American and how to move forward as a country.
Well, you definitely have a great ground game. I watched you pounding the pavement even all through Ramadan in the very, very long hot days without food or water. So congratulations on your win and, you know, looking forward to how it goes. So Qasem can't stay for the entire episode. So we're going to try to maximize your time with us and get right into some of the big stories this past week. I want to start with towards the end of last week, we had, I think last Friday, Vice President Pence makes a visit to the detention centers. He visits the border. And it was, you know, it depends on who you ask, right? Like some people are saying, oh, it was just a big kind of photo op. It was just, and the photos that have emerged have been kind of startling while he's like kind of very kind of coldly surveying like hundreds of men behind this chain link fence and looking like they're in cages, and they are. And then he's in a detention center for children as well. So you were tweeting a lot about this. And Qasem, can you tell us kind of your take? What is your analysis about this visit? And then his response, Pence's response specifically to the conditions that he thinks he saw?
Well, the first thing that crossed my mind was this quote by a British statesman politician, Tony Benn, who says that the way a government treats refugees is very instructive because it shows you how they would treat the rest of us if they thought they could get away with it. And I read that and it just, I kind of had this aha and horrifying moment because it's completely true. The idea is that refugees don't have the same rights. And so therefore it's okay to mistreat them and lock them in cages and deny them food and water and shelter and toothbrushes and a bed. And then to have the vice president go and try to do this PR stunt is the best way I can describe it, and have it backfire spectacularly. Kind of what's been the standard of this entire administration. And worst of all, I thought, was the response from some on the right who saw these horrible conditions and kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, yeah, that's not a big deal. We're okay with that.
You say it backfired on them, but why do you think it did?
Well, I think that it just kind of reaffirmed for people on the center and on the left that the conditions really are as horrible as they were described by AOC and by other members of Congress who had visited.
Now, I guess I didn't get that impression at all.
Well, and that's what I think the second point of I'm saying is that the horrifying part is that there are people on the right who kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, this isn't so bad at all. So,
I mean, to me, it looked like they obviously chose where to take people. This was a planned, you know, display of their detention centers. So I'm not saying Trump did this because obviously he did not. And although he claims credit for it again and again, like today at the cabinet meeting, he's like, oh, that was my idea. I see.
It has been reported a couple times that it was at his behest. I mean, I don't know.
Well, he might have said he wanted to show. But so given what they chose a very new, very low density children's center and an adult center that was completely inhumane. It seemed like to me that was intentional strategy of trying to say, oh, the kids are fine. We're not torturing children. That polls very, very badly. Like even Republicans could give it squishy when you torture children. So we're going to show how great and lovely the children are being treated, and we can shut down all the arguments. And then we can show ourselves being tough to the scary brown men for a twofold effect, which is one, to show like he's tough on the border. So there's a crisis going on. They need more funds. And two, get the message out to would-be asylum seekers, refugees, because being cruel to detainees doesn't really help as a detention strategy unless people know that's a strategy.
I've read similar analysis that, you know, this kind of aligns with Trump's really difficult dance on these issues, which is we want to say that there's a lot of overcrowding and all we have this, you know, humanitarian crisis at the border because the Dems aren't doing what they're supposed to do. So he wants to show that. He wants to show these conditions, but at the same time show that we are not being cruel to families and children. And that's what they were trying to do.
But I don't think that worked. I mean, I you see the picture of the young girl sitting by herself. I mean,
right.
I've got a 3-year-old daughter, and that girl looks about that age or younger. And it's just, you know, as a parent, you just think about the idea of your child sitting in some, you know, cold cement floor or some steel railing alone without anyone they know there. I mean, that if you're a parent, that alone can be seen as torture of children. I can't think of
but see, you caught that. Gossip, yeah. You caught that in that photograph. That little girl was sitting behind the kids who were grouped together that Pence was talking to alone on a bench by herself. And you're right. She was a little girl, maybe around 2 or 3 years old. And even I had not. And then after that, I tried to kind of take a look at like also the kids in the background. But yeah. I hadn't caught that image and you did. And that was really troubling. It's true. And I also thought it was interesting that, you know, they're saying that, you know, when they're holding the adults, you know, the reporter said there was a horrible stench. Men were telling them that not only are they sleeping in concrete, but they have to ask to drink water. So they don't have free access to water. It's days and days. They can't take a bath, you know, sweltering conditions. But then in the children's detention center, the kids were like really bundled up.
Yeah.
Which is odd.
Which makes me wonder about the comments about putting them in an ice box, right? The
right.
Colloquial term used for how they're taking babies from parents and putting them in just a super cold facility to make them uncomfortable. And again, that's a form of torture. I mean, you put somebody in a facility that's 50 degrees. I don't know how you call that humane by any stretch of the imagination.
And kids are getting sick because of things like that and the overcrowding and stuff. I have spent the last 8-9 months being very conscientiously doing more self-care. And, you know, it's not all about getting in shape, although that feels great, but it's actually been about, for me, learning healthier habits, you know, feeling better about myself, knowing when I need more sleep, being in tune with my body's needs, taking a bubble bath when I need it, just basically a whole lifestyle adjustment.
And I would say, Rabia, from my perspective, like, you can see how clear that is. Like, you have definitely developed a new approach to not just exercise, but to like making sure, like, this day was crazy, it was hectic, and not like everything went nuts, but yeah, I'm gonna make sure I have my time to do my workout, yeah, and to do what I need to do to be a happy person. And you can definitely see that
my priorities have changed. But, you know, it's not easy to do. It takes a lot of willpower. But here's the thing, and there's a lot of different programs out there, and like different programs, this one for fitness and this one for mindfulness and this one for this, but what if there's one program for all of your health and weight loss needs? Because there is, which is kind of amazing. You don't have to hunt anymore for training apps, workouts, calorie trackers, meal plans, because there is Noom, and Noom is pretty amazing. It's every single thing you need for a better lifestyle in one place.
Noom is a habit-changing solution that helps users learn to develop a new relationship with food through personalized courses. It's based in psychology, and Noom teaches you why you do the things you do and arms you with the tools you need to break bad habits and replace them with better ones.
Yeah, this is supposed to be like this cognitive behavioral approach, but whatever it is, it works, okay? Because it's not a diet. It is a healthy and easy to stick to way of life. And as somebody who has spent like 30 years of her life dieting, stop dieting. It's never about dieting.
With Noom, no food is good or bad or off limits. It's about teaching moderation and a new healthy lifestyle. And it can be used in conjunction with many pre-existing popular diets.
And Noom also connects you to a goal specialist, and you are part of a community of members that keep you motivated and accountable. So it's like having your workout bestie or a lifestyle buddy all in one place.
And you're human, so if you go off track, there's no shaming. Just tips to get you back on track tomorrow.
Yeah, because you don't change it all in one day, and you don't have to change it all in one day, because small steps make big progress. So sign up for your trial today at Noom.com/45th. That's Noom, Noom.com/45th. What do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/45th to start your trial today. That's Noom.com/45th, the last weight loss program you'll ever need. I want to follow that up with more immigration related news, and that is the ICE raids that were supposed to begin this weekend that Trump very openly announced on Sunday. We're going to start these raids all over the country. And there are some reports, but I haven't seen, unless I've just missed it, because it's, like I said, like an avalanche of crap news coming at us in the last few days. I haven't seen a lot of reports of raids. What are you experiencing, like, kind of in your local community? Northern Virginia, it has huge immigrant populations. Raids happen there. I mean, like, we're familiar with that in that area. So have you heard or seen anything like in your area?
I'm on the board of a couple of nonprofits that work on bringing people of faith and no faith together for social justice causes. One of the organizations, the executive director called me and said that they have a client who is from Guatemala, and she was born here. Her mother's undocumented, and they've been here, I don't know, 15, 16 years. And ICE is going around looking for them, and they just wanted advice on what they should do. So we're seeing some examples of that over here. And, you know, I haven't seen any videos or major headline news yet of massive arrests.
Happen. It seems like they did not happen at all.
It might have just been like a fear-mongering tactic, too. But I did get one call about it. And I don't know if it was directly related to the raids or not, but the fear is definitely out there. I think they've done a good job of creating fear and distrust in the community.
The fear was the point. It didn't seem like any extra sort of raid activity was taking place.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it. And also, but it could also be because this is a big criticism leveled at the president that, oh, my God, you just gave it away. Like, you know, you're putting these operations in danger and the agents themselves when you are announcing when it's going to happen. I mean, you may as well like give date, time, location on the raids as well. So that maybe that also prevented it, because, I mean, obviously an important element of a raid is the element of surprise. Right. So maybe ICE had to kind of recalibrate after he made that announcement.
Well, that's twice now, right? Because they tried to do it like a month ago and he announced it canceled it, and this is the second time. You know, one other element of this I want to talk about, and I get some criticism for this when I tweet about this, but when I mentioned that the vast majority of these individuals who are seeking asylum are themselves Christian, and the reason why I think it's relevant...
Yeah, you bring that up a lot. Yeah. I've noticed that.
But there's a reason why I bring that up a lot. It's because this administration claims to be the most Christian administration in the history of the country, and how this is a Christian nation and how we have to behave Christ-like. And, you know, as Muslims, we love Jesus. And so my thought is, well, no, we're a secular nation. You know, I believe in separation of religion and state. I believe in secular governance. But if you're going to call yourself a Christian nation and a Christian administration, then shouldn't you be held accountable to those Christian standards of compassion and civility and decency? And so I think the reason why I call it out is because it's just another form of hypocrisy in this administration. The same was true when there were Iraqi Christians at fear of being deported back to an area where they would be influenced by Daesh and ISIS. And so I think it just points out to how this is not about religion. It's not about law and order. It really is about this racism and this xenophobia of anyone who is perceived as the other, whether it's by nationality, whether it is by race. But it's fundamental, I think, to this conversation to recognize that what they're defending is not law and order. It's trying to create this, you know, racially homogenous, leaning toward a European type of immigration policy that disfavors anyone else. Stephen Miller's kind of been at the forefront of this. Now, I'm not sure why media and journalists aren't attacking this angle of it in more detail.
Yeah, I do certainly think, you know, what that points out is that when you're a religious minority, you think maybe it's just about the fact that you're a religious minority, but it is really about brown and black bodies. He doesn't care. I mean, we should know this, whether it's the NBA, whether it's players kneeling, right? NFL, NBA mm-hmm. players kneeling. It is about white Christian supremacy. And that is a very specific kind of ideology versus just being a Christian supremacist necessarily. So yeah, their compassion doesn't extend beyond white Christians, it sounds like. Which is actually a great segue into what is happening like for the last couple of days. And that is this like kind of battle that's exploded between Trump and the squad. So
can we not call it that? My God.
Can we not call it? But you know what? I need to find out where the hell did that come from. I have
Fox
no
News.
Idea. Did
Lots
it?
Of friends. Yeah.
Okay. Then I refuse to call it the squad.
Yeah.
It just keeps it recorded.
It's like, you know, it's not enough. Like, they've, you know, the racism, they got that going. They make sure there's a touch of sexism in there, too. So they do this whole, like, cheerleader thing.
All right. But we are talking specifically about four legislators. We're talking about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Pressley, and Rashida Tlaib. They seem to be the focus of the president's ire. And I'm trying to figure out, so what was going on before the president basically lost his mind over the weekend and started tweeting, like, awfully racist things?
He was watching Fox News.
He was watching Fox News, but also... There was some infighting happening, right? Like between these four legislators and Nancy Pelosi. It seemed like there was something happening there that prompted Trump to be like, I'm going to stick my foot in this conflict and make it worse.
I think it's kind of been a brewing conflict between this newer class of electeds and kind of the Democratic establishment on how things should be done. And I think in this particular disagreement, fight, whatever adjective you want to use to describe it, it stemmed from the refusal of these four legislators to vote in favor of the $4.7 billion package for Border Patrol. And Speaker Pelosi was upset that they didn't vote, and she kind of dismissed their influence on social media and dismissed their influence in their election, and followed that up by saying that, let's not attack each other on Twitter and social media. And then no sooner did she say that, but the House Democrats, I think, which is the account is run by Representative Jeffries, tweeted an attack on the chief of staff for Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez. And I think, you know, the president saw that and just decided to capitalize on it. And I'm reminded, Jake Tapper tweeted this out of a quote by Steve Bannon from a couple of years ago, that, you know, if we can get the Democrats talking about race and racism, then we're going to crush them every single time. So I think with 2020 coming up, I see this as a very deliberate and calculated attack by the president to rile up his base and to keep people focused on things that he wants them to be focused on, not on the things that will be more damaging to him.
So It began on Sunday. I mean, this could be, like you said, a strategic, I mean, although it's hard to imagine him being strategic in any way. But yeah, I mean, certainly I do think that they do have a point that if this becomes kind of a central talking point for Democrats, there's a lot of people it does put off. And I mean, it sickens me that that's even the case. But that is the truth. Bannon, I think, is right about that. But on Sunday, Trump wades into this by saying, "So interesting to see the progressive Democrat congresswomen who originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, the worst, most corrupt and inept anywhere in the world, even if they have a functioning government at all, now loudly and viciously telling the people of the United States, the greatest and most powerful nation on earth, how our government is to be run. Why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested place from where they came? Then come back and show us how it's done. Those places need help badly. You can't leave fast enough. I'm sure that Nancy Pelosi would be very happy to help quickly work out free travel arrangements." It was across three tweets, he writes this thread. And then as everybody has a complete and utter meltdown at the utter racism, which brown and black person hasn't heard, you know, "Go back to where you came from"? I mean, like, yeah. I don't even know how many times I've heard it, right?
It's worth noting, though, at that moment. So what happened, Fox and Friends had a segment on that attacked the squad, quote unquote, as I called it, these four representatives. But they didn't do a "go back to where you come from" argument. That was Trump watching this attack on Fox and Friends, these four representatives. And he came up with this whole "go back to where you came from" line of attack. Mm-hmm. So although Fox started it, Trump brought that racism.
Enhanced it.
Yeah.
He enhanced it. And of course, he's
worth mentioning as well that, you know, three of the four congresswomen here were born in the United States. And Representative Ilhan Omar being an immigrant isn't shocking at all. Eight of the original 81 members of Congress were immigrants. Alexander Hamilton was an immigrant. Many of the original Supreme Court justices were immigrants as well. So,
but they're not even immigrant at all. Like, it's, I mean, like, Puerto Rico, is Trump think that's now, like, AOC's right. parents came from there, but that's America.
Right.
Ayanna Pressley is just American for, like, how many generations back? Probably,
200.
She was born in Cincinnati. I mean, you know, the foreign country of Ohio, right?
Yeah. Right. And, you know, Ilhan Omar has been a U.S. citizen longer than Trump's own wife has been a U.S. citizen. So now, I mean, there's all kinds of spins happening, of course. He's saying it wasn't racist. There was some event that he spoke at. I can't even remember what it was. Oh, it was the third annual American product showcase thing at the White House, which is just, what is that even? It's like a show and tell for American companies.
Photo opportunity.
But of course he did get, you know, he gets diverted. So he started talking about that. And he's like, "Well, I'm not racist and I stand by what I said." And they basically can go back to where they came from. But then on the other hand, they're also like, the defense is that, well, what we meant was they can go back and fix what's happening in their home states and come back and show it, which is obviously complete and utter bullshit.
I hate to call anything Trump does strategic or tactical,
right.
But he does have like strategic impulses. And I think mm-hmm. this was a strategic impulse, which was to make race the center in the whole Bannon-style ideology. But I think he did miscalculate and that he is so racist, he did not realize he was being overtly racist. And his intention of being covertly racist was ruined by his own inability to keep the racism semi-covert. I don't think this whole brouhaha was the plan because it's distracting. It makes everyone... It's not helping him.
But he is going all in, Susan. He's
because
not
that's
backing
who, that's
down.
Who Trump is. Doesn't matter what it is. Trump goes all in on like anything he gets wrong.
Is this a distraction from the Epstein, or is it an attempt to distract from that?
That's a result. That I don't think that's would it be worth this kind of nuclear meltdown. I think Trump just like he won't back down on anything. He gets something wrong, he insists he's right. I mean, like Tim Apple. And, it was easier to say his name than Tim
right.
Cook. Like he just doubles down.
He can do it because virtually his entire party is silent on it. Very few voices have said, "Well, that was racist." I mean, of all things, Geraldo Rivera was like, "Mr. President, this is, you know, this is not you." Yeah, it is him. But Trump tripled down. Just yesterday he tweeted, "This will never be a socialist or a communist country. If you are not happy here," in all caps, "you can leave. It's your choice and your choice alone. This is about love for America. Certain people hate our country." He is saying that American congresswomen, that U.S. congressmen, these women hate our country. And then he goes on to say they are anti-Israel, pro-Al-Qaeda, and comment on the 9/11 attack, "Some people did something. Radical left Democrats want open borders, which means drugs, crime, human trafficking." He's just bringing it all together. Then he talks about the concentration camps. It's really pretty. It's as ugly and blatant. Although, you know what? Well, That's how his campaign started.
One thing he's trying to do is to distance himself from the racism of his remarks by claiming, and there's like a widespread reaction.
It's politics.
Yeah. No. They're rephrasing it now. They're not saying he said, go back to where you came from. They're saying he said, if you don't like it, you can leave. That's the message they've gone to. They're trying to shift the narrative and say, oh, Trump said, if you don't like it, you can leave. That's not racist. When in reality, he said, you can go back to where you came from. But that's why he keeps hammering this line about, oh, if you don't like it, go home. Are you
not go leave home. Where? Go
well,
where?
Leave anywhere. He's not saying it's because they should go back to where they came from. They should just leave in general. So he's trying to distance the racism by doing that.
Well, and I mean, I think there's like a massive irony of a guy who ran on a whole platform that this country is terrible and failed. That for him to now criticize other people for criticizing the country's policies. I mean, he literally ran on that platform. That he alone can fix it, and no one told him to go back where he came from. No one told him to leave the country. The idea that just because you criticize your nation, you're somehow you're disloyal is just nonsense. I mean, we need to be able to criticize. Our preamble literally begins with "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union." The framers acknowledged that we are forming this union, and the idea is to make it more perfect. And how do you make it more perfect if you're not able to criticize or raise your voice or opinion on things that need to be made better? So to suddenly, translate that into being disloyal or unpatriotic is really the antithesis of what it's ever meant to be an American from the very get-go of our country's founding.
But part of it is that it's not just that criticism. He's not saying all criticism is bad or unpatriotic. Obviously, he himself is a huge critic of the U.S., and he campaigned on America not being great. But it's sort of this implicit, like, only white people and mostly white men criticize the U.S. because their loyalty and patriotism is unquestioned in general. So it's okay for them to critique it. But for anyone who's brown...
He's not telling Nancy Pelosi to go back to where you came from. He's not telling Chuck Schumer to go back to where you came from.
Anyone who's brown is already suspect. So any indication that they're not fully loyal is a proof that they're actually aligned to foreign forces or that they're against America.
Yeah. He also invokes Israel numerous times across these tweets. And I thought that was interesting about that these four women are very explicitly anti-Israel. I mean, he says pro Al-Qaeda, and which is just like, what? But anyway.
Yeah, I feel like that's getting no attention. The fact that he's repeatedly claiming that, well, Ilhan Omar is like pro-terrorist and pro Al-Qaeda. And everyone's kind of just like blinking at that and focusing on the racism. But like, that's a seriously insane charge.
It is insane. But it's also insane that, guess what? She was actually posed that question in a press conference yesterday. A member of the media said, asked her about, being pro Al-Qaeda. And she's like, I am not going to dignify this with a response. I also wonder, because we've seen this flare up numerous times, specifically with Ilhan Omar. He attacks her in a way that I feel like he is trying to create enough danger to, like, literally her safety. I mean, like, I feel like she's going to be unsafe because of the charges he levels against her. But it could, I don't know. I feel like he's trying to make her a target for somebody crazy. I don't know if that's just, I'm overreaching, but it just seems like he's saying things about her that he's pretty much calling her a criminal. To say somebody's pro Al-Qaeda.
He's calling her a terrorist. He's calling her a terrorist. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's already getting enough death threats as it is. I mean, this is something that even now, even literally while I'm on this podcast with you guys, I just got another really nasty email from somebody who is upset that I'm an American Muslim running for office. And they're using the most vulgar word. I'll post a screenshot of it later on. But, words have consequences. And when the president demonizes people the way he is, there's a reaction to that. And the president sets the tone for the country, and the tone he's setting is that if you're an immigrant or a person of color, then you don't belong. And that has an impact on society in some really horrible ways.
Susan, you always look fantastic. So I want you to tell our listeners, how would you describe your style in one word?
Lazy, but in a way that doesn't look it. I know that's many words, but that's definitely my style, is to try and look like I put effort into it when I don't. Or I try. I don't like shopping. I mean, the worst, like, hell is literally going to a store and trying on jeans until you die.
So we're never going to find you hanging out at the mall, basically, is what you're saying.
No, okay. No, unless it's at the food court, no. So that's why I love Stitch Fix so much, because they make me look like I am super intelligent about styles and dressing, and that I know all the fashion secrets when I know almost none of them.
I'm telling you, whenever I'm hanging out with you, I'm just like, I hate it, man. She's tall, blonde, brilliant, and she knows how to dress. Pisses
well,
me off.
Well, what I do have is Stitch Fix's little card. So yeah. Stitch Fix is a subscription service where you sign up, and whatever schedule you want, they send you updates for your wardrobe. They give you a stylist who looks at what your style is, reviews your comments, what things you need, what the gaps in your wardrobe are, and they send you shit that looks good, works well together, and works well with your existing stuff. And they send you these little cards that show, like, outfit ideas. Here's what you get in this package.
I love those.
Here's, like, a new dress. And here's what you can pair it with. And I'm like, you can pair this, like, red-purple dress with that green, beige, or khaki jacket. And you're like, okay, if you say so, Stitch Fix. And guess what? They're right. So, for instance, I got a new dress in Stitch Fix that was kind of a floral thing. And I told them in the stylist stuff, I was like, you know what? I'm really, really predictable. I have the same stuff all the time. I don't do florals. Maybe find me a floral that looks good and I'm comfortable with. Mm. And they did. And also, it goes great with my existing jackets. So I wear it as much as I can now without anyone noticing that I'm wearing it all the time.
Well, I love the fact that they do pick out pieces for you that you might not try out on your own. And that's always been hard for me. I just stick to the same old stuff. Even, you know, there are women who will be like, oh, I'm just going to try on something new, take a little selfie. I won't even do that. And I'm like, nope, just give me my...
Oh, that's not me.
Nope, not me either. So I love that Stitch Fix forces me to try on things I would never try on otherwise.
So go find how you can be an amazing... classy dresser, just like me.
Just like
by going
you.
To Stitch Fix. Thanks to Stitch Fix. By going to stitchfix.com/45th, and you'll get an extra 25% off when you keep everything in your box. That's stitchfix.com/45th. stitchfix.com/45th.
Can I ask you, Gossam, has this kind of stuff filtered down into, like, your own campaign? I know it's one thing to get, like, emails from randos, but it's another thing, like, if your actual political opponents use the same kind of language and rhetoric and attacks. Have you had any attacks on you, like, publicly because of your ethnicity, religion, anything?
No, not publicly in the sense that, like, face-to-face, but definitely publicly in the sense that people have sent me death threats. The FBI is investigating one right now, and I just got confirmation today that the one guy they arrested for threatening to kill me, has his trial begins on October 7th. So and there's several others that are being investigated too. So absolutely, I mean, I'm seeing it firsthand. You know, it's part of, unfortunately, part of my daily life. So this is something very near and dear, not just on Twitter, but this is having a very real impact in my life.
And look, Trump is obviously the main symptom, the most prominent symptom of this. But Trump alone couldn't do this. Trump alone could say crazy shit, but it wouldn't have the impact unless, in fact, the entire Republican Party is fully on board with what's happening. There was a watch for, like, who would respond from the GOP. And I think at least yesterday, there were maybe like 15, 16 tweets that were arguably coming out against Trump's comments. Only like two of them mentioned racism. Mm. And most of them were like, although I strongly disagree with the awful rhetoric of those representatives, what Trump said was, insert random verb that's not racism here. like, you know.
Well, the
wait, House... Yeah, what was the Daily... Did you see the Daily Show's generator for headlines about, like, what kind of...
No, is that a
they
thing
have
now?
It was like, Trump makes a statement and dips his toe into a brief kerfuffle of racistly tinged fine wines. Yeah.
That's exactly... Not, well, here's the thing, though. It's not just, like, other GOP leadership that's using this. The media also. I mean, I'm so sick of seeing the headlines that it's, like, you know, racially charged, racially tinged, racially offensive. It's racist. It's just racist.
The one headline I really appreciated, it was from CNN and The Independent.
CNN was good.
That said, Trump denies racist tweets are racist.
That's the thing. Trump could come out and say, like, he could, like, use the N-word and say, like, black people are all dumb. And people would be asking him from the media, like, Trump, do you think what you said was racist? And they'd be like, no, I don't.
Right. Well, part of the response to this is that the House Democrats actually are going to be introducing a resolution condemning Trump's attacks. He's going to be censored by the House. And if this passes, this is, like, I think the second time in history that this has ever happened. Nancy Pelosi announced a resolution, and she said the president went beyond his own low standards using disgraceful language about members of Congress. It's, let's see, it was sponsored by Representative Tom Malinowski, who's actually born in Poland. So he's also an immigrant. And let's see what happens. The Republicans are also going to have to obviously vote, and that will kind of be a referendum on who stands where. But everybody knows Trump will be watching and counting every single vote.
He's already tweeted that this shouldn't happen because there's not a racist bone in his body.
Yeah, yeah. So Liz Cheney held I don't know if she held a press conference alone, but I just saw a clip of it where she said she kind of deflected all questions about the racism of Trump's tweets and said, nope, basically these four women and the kinds of, you know, it's interesting, like the way GOP deflects is they say that when you bring up racism, that makes you racist. And that's the argument she used here. And then shockingly, just today, Kellyanne, in the middle of a press gaggle outside, again, a reporter asks her about these tweets and she responds to the reporter by saying, what ethnicity are you?
It was even before that, you hear what she said?
I did not hear what preceded that, no.
Oh, she said these four representatives represent the darkest element of American society.
Oh, that's interesting language. Okay.
Yeah, like I would say, I'd say it's like an awkward like slip of the tongue, but it seems way too deliberate.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you kind of have your, I mean, like you already have kind of your communications and PR, like you should have some, I mean, that's what she does. That's her job.
Yeah. She's, it seemed like she was trying to set up a claim that she wanted people to accuse her of racism for saying that. And then she'd be like, no, it wasn't racist. She'd, look how overreacting you are. It was a slip of the tongue, or I just didn't mean it that way. But then she asked about the reporters, the Jewish reporter's ethnicity. And that's, I got nothing.
Yeah. Well, he was like, what's the relevance? She goes on to talk about why it's relevant. And I want to insert a clip so folks can hear that.
What's your ethnicity?
Why is that relevant?
No, because I'm asking you a question. My ancestors are from Ireland and Italy.
My own ethnicity is not relevant to the question I'm asking.
No, it is, because you're asking about, he said originally. He said originally from.
I'm
and you know everything he has said since, and to have a full conversation. The president's already commented on that. The president's already commented on that, and he said a lot about this since that one tweet. No, he's put out a lot of tweets, and he made himself available to all of you yesterday. Yes, he has. He's tired. A lot of us are sick and tired of this country, of America coming last, to people who swore an oath of office. Sick and tired of our military being denigrated. Sick and tired of the Customs and Border Patrol people, the protection people I was with, who are overwhelmingly Hispanic, by the way, in McAllen, Texas. Sick and tired of them being, no, you don't understand, because you didn't go, being criticized, being doxxed by a bunch of Hollywood D-listers who have nothing else to do but sit on their asses on Twitter all day and try to dox brave men and women who are diving into the Rio Grande to save people who are drowning, who are taking other people's babies into custody and diapering them and feeding them and looking the other way while people are running across with drugs. That's going on.
So, Qasem, thank you so much for joining us. I know you have to head out now. You have very important campaign stuff to do. So thanks for coming on this week, and I hope you come back soon.
Thanks, you guys. You guys are an amazing podcast. It's always a pleasure to be on, and I do hope to be back soon.
Keep bringing us wisdom on Twitter, and tell us what is your handle so people can follow you there.
I'm easy to find. I'm Qasem Rashid, Qasimrashid.
Yeah, and you landed the gold to handle. All right. Thank you so much, Qasem. Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye, Qasem.
And the interesting thing about Kellyanne Conway, of course, is that yesterday her husband wrote an op-ed that
I didn't read it.
Racist.
Okay. What happens in that home?
I am so morbidly curious. Like, is it all like they're making sure at least one of them is going to be employable after the Trump administration?
I think that's been your theory.
Or are they just in the middle of a collapsing marriage and they cannot separate due to some kind of like financial or like custody arrangement? So really, they're like divorced in fact, but not legally. And this is how they express it and try and pretend they're not totally at odds.
I have considered divorce over like toilet seats and trash not going out. So I don't understand. That's a reality show I would watch. I would watch that reality show.
Something's wrong. I wouldn't know. Like either it's like some kind of.
Maybe the rule that the minute you step in the house, but if you're around each other, you zero mention of politics.
This doesn't work though when you're in the news all day. So your spouse knows that you have total contempt for their point of view.
I know. I don't understand. All right. Okay. So let's move on to some other news.
Acosta.
Friday was a busy day. And you know what?
I have to say that I'm surprised because I really thought this administration is so shame. Like, and Trump, because he was still backing him, that I didn't think he was going to resign. So I was pretty surprised.
Yeah. Well, so what happened last week is we had the press conference from Acosta. It was pretty awful. He answered questions for an hour, which was kind of impressive on its own. But it was not the best showing. That's not his forte. It was not a great. Yeah. It wasn't like a Kavanaugh-style fire and brimstone kind of like, oh, how dare you? It was like, here are my reasons, and I did good as a prosecutor.
He's not good on camera anyways, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the next day, one of the questions was like, do you have like Trump support? And he's like, I have been told by Mulvaney, I can tell you that I have full support of the president. Next day, he's gone. Now, it does seem like actually the resignation wasn't Trump's idea, and that Trump wasn't forcing it. It does seem like actually Acosta, on his own, decided this was not going to go away, and he needed to step down for both their good. But yeah, he's out. Now, the Trump administration has had by far like the most cabinet level positions step down due to scandal or ethics concerns out of any administration ever.
I thought he actually crossed that threshold
long ago. But this is like insanely the number of departures has not ceased. It is pretty. And the thing is that of all of the cabinet secretaries, Acosta was definitely in the upper in terms of
Right.
Competence and not being evil. He was actually one of the better ones. It was just this one high profile scandal, which I don't think I'm not saying he shouldn't have resigned or that he's not responsible. But also, I don't he's not as responsible as many other council secretaries. And it's not
right. He made a terrible discretionary decision, right?
I mean, discretionary. What seems to have really happened here is that back in 2008, when Saul went down, Epstein traded information for a lesser sentence, a lesser plea. He was told, apparently, there's a story that he, during his vetting processes for the cabinet back in 2017, he said, oh, I was told by Main Justice back in D.C. to stand down. He belongs to intelligence. And we do seem to know that in 2008, Epstein was an informant against two Wall Street hedge fund managers who were charged with securities fraud violations. And Epstein reportedly, we know from the indictment of those two hedge fund guys that there was a guy named Major Investor Number One who was the basis and made the complaints against them. And that seems to have been Epstein. So what really happened is that Epstein cut a deal. The DOJ personnel, both in the Florida office down there and back home, didn't take this sex trafficking case very seriously. They felt like the girls were prostitutes. They were not believable. They were not credible. They didn't think it was actual, quote unquote, real child prostitution. Mm-hmm. So they're like, we care more right now in the political environment about going after Wall Street. Let's cut them a deal on the sex trafficking so we can get these Wall Street traders, who, by the way, were both acquitted because DOJ's case sucked.
Right.
Anyway, bye-bye, Epstein. Well,
bye-bye, Epstein. We have no secretary for the Department of Labor, which I guess is a little less problematic than some of the other empty positions. I think we just got a new acting secretary of defense.
We did. It is Richard Spencer, but not the one you're thinking of.
I know. When I saw the headline, I was like, wait, what?
I was like, no, that cannot be. And then okay, we're not there yet.
This is the third one under this administration. All right, so Epstein is out. I mean, I wondered if his resignation came so that people would stop digging more about the whys and maybe there's something else he's trying to protect.
I don't think so necessarily, because with the prosecution ongoing, whatever would come out would probably come out anyway. I just think it was bad, constant PR, and they just realized it was not going to get better.
Yeah, not worth it. All right. Speaking of Epstein, let's talk about what's happened since his arrest. Just in the past week, an additional 14 women have come forward saying that he assaulted them as children. Sexually assaulted, raped, I don't know, I think it probably spans all kinds of different crimes against them. But his lawyers have asked for bail, and he had a bail hearing yesterday. They want to be released to prison so he can stay in his mansion. The judge did not make a decision on the bail. He said, I think he's going to make a decision this Thursday, so we'll know before the next episode's out. But, there was some stuff that came out of the bail hearing that was news to the rest of us, because the prosecutors revealed on Monday that, of course, their argument is that he should not be granted bail. He's a flight risk. He's got so many resources. And what they reported was that they found piles of cash, dozens of diamonds, and an expired passport with Epstein's picture, but a different name, that showed that his residence was Saudi Arabia.
Not residence. It was a Saudi-issued passport.
That's not what I've read. I keep reading that it lists Saudi as his residence, but not that specifically that it's a Saudi passport. It's being reported as a foreign passport, but not a Saudi passport.
So I don't think that. So in truth, I think actually Epstein is right when his attorneys are arguing that's not evidence he's a flight risk. It was an expired passport. And my guess from what I've seen is that has nothing to do with like an escape plan and all to do with investment, because in Saudi, they have tight rules on who can, you know, run hedge funds there, have investments there. So that's it true. Seems more like it was a way he could run a hedge fund in Saudi Arabia or have some kind of investment or like do something there that required a pretend.
You can't even own a business. You have to have some kind of residency there, or you have to have a Saudi partner to do it.
Yeah. So I think that's probably what that was about. I don't think that was actually related to.
Well, that might not be it, but they did argue that he has tons of resources and connections and, you know, jets and this and that, and he can just take off.
But it's not a billionaire, because in his financial statement, he listed about $500 million worth of assets. So the whole billionaire thing does not seem to be true. Not that $500 million is in sneeze at. But also, it's all in property. It's all like in his islands and his like mansion. Uh-huh. It's not, as someone put on Twitter, like most Americans, his wealth is tied up in his housing, including his pedophile island, as they call it, the island that Trump claims he did not know the name of. I mean, his whole career is shady and messed up, and he's a scam artist. And even the DOJ in his filings is like, we don't know. Like, if we let him out, he can flee the country and go do his job somewhere elsewhere in the world, whatever that job is. We don't know how he makes his money, but he'll do it somewhere else.
We don't know. Are you saying the DOJ doesn't know yet?
They said in their filing that we don't know how he makes the money.
Wow. Well, I'm assuming they'll figure that out soon. They also said that they found a huge volume of photographs of nude and partially nude young women and girls. Underage girls, and some of his own victims who have come forward, you know, identified in the pictures. But his lawyers argued that, ever since he's, you know, the previous non-prosecution agreement sex offender charge, he's been clean, no violations for 9 years. And they actually said it's not like he's an out of control rapist.
Yeah. And the judge was like, how do you know that?
How do you know that? Well, he's an out-of-control something, for sure. So that's what's going on with Epstein.
Well, you know, I still want to know if those pictures, we've not seen anything confirm this, if those pictures were really just of girls. Some were, but it's possible he kept them not for the reason you expect, but because we know he engaged in extensive blackmail schemes. So was he holding them not because he wanted to hold on to his illegal child pornography, or because he needed to hold on to them so he still had leverage over whoever he was blackmailing?
Or it could be both. I mean,
or both. Yeah. I mean, I guess, yeah. You know, little column A, little column B.
What do you think about Dershowitz's involvement in all of this? What do you think he's going to go down with this?
I don't know.
He keeps saying he had one massage from an old Russian lady, I think on top of his clothing, and that was it. Let's see. All right. I don't want to think about eye bleach, right? Any other news that we want to go over this week, Susan?
Yeah, the census.
Census, what's going on there?
So it's done. As of today, Tuesday, they issued an order, a permanent injunction. There will not be a citizenship question on census. What happened is after last week.
Didn't he just kind of backtrack too last week about it?
Oh, he totally did. So what happened was he had a press conference, announced what he was going to do, and no one really knew because there was reports everywhere that Trump was going to use an executive order to somehow order commerce to include it on the census. No one knew. So he gets to this press conference in like the Rose Garden outside somewhere, and he says, "We are not backing down," and then announces that, yeah, they're totally backing down.
Totally backing down.
And so, of course, you have the case where like most of the news outlets have headlines that are like, Trump backs away from census question, or Trump stands down, does not include question on census. And then you have Fox that's like, Trump says will not back down, issues order regarding citizenship data collection. Because what Trump did is announce that he could or was going to use other forms of government information, other databases, to basically figure out citizenship percentages and numbers that way, which is what was suggested early on in litigation over the census question about other ways that this information could be obtained without doing something as drastic as putting on the census and skewing the results there. So Trump just basically went back to what was originally told he should do in the first place. What was interesting, though, is that there was some... It didn't get a whole lot of attention because the whole thing was kind of garbled and confusing, and it's hard to say for sure what was meant. But both Trump and then Barr more explicitly referenced using this citizenship data for apportionment purposes, as well as for gerrymandering purposes. But why that's relevant is it seems, at least based on the words I said, they intend or have a strategy of trying to basically apportion representatives based not on total population, but based on total citizen population. Now, this is a reminder, of course, for the House of Representatives every 10 years with the census, and we use the census data to reapportion like what how many representatives each state gets. So if Texas now has like 50 million people or whatever, the numbers get reallocated to match that. The issue, though, for what Trump and Barr said they want to do is that, one, the 14th Amendment says that for apportionment, like, total population is what is counted. It is not anything else, not voters, it's not anything like that. It is total numbers of people. The other issue, and this could be why they fought so hard for the census question, is that for apportionment, which is the number of votes each state gets, you cannot use statistical analysis. You can't use sampling. You can't say, oh, we know here's how many people are really here. The census undercounted some groups. Here's what the real numbers are based on all these reasons we know scientifically what they should be. You can use those numbers for gerrymandering, for setting the districts inside of the state. But you can't use outside data that did not come from the census in setting the apportionment numbers. So I wonder if the reason we had this whole fight over the census was because they had this plan to somehow get past the 14th Amendment and to apportion representatives by citizen count only. But to do that constitutionally, it needed to have that information derived from the census and not from other methods.
And then he realized that we can do it from other methods.
But we can't. We can, but that data cannot be used for apportionment. It can be used for gerrymandering. Okay. Okay. They can still go ahead and do that and set up districts like that. But
Well, that's interesting because, you know, now that this fight is over, I wonder also if part of like the last few days of him screaming about, you know, these women and screaming his racist screams, is because that was a big sell for his base, right?
Like it
that
was like it could be. He's just so pissed and angry about a hardcore loss.
It's a straight up loss, but also this is one way to remind the base: I'm still here. I'm still racist. We're still gonna take care of these people.
I can still do things. I'm still powerful.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Well, at least the system worked there. Let's see how long that'll stand. Anything else?
No, that is it for now.
All right. I feel like there, I don't know. I was like, maybe it just feels like it's been a really long few days, but I feel like there's all this other news too that I'm missing, but I don't know. Anyway, if you didn't catch it, then it's fine.
It feels like it was just everyone dominated by Trump's openly racist shit and all the weirdness over putting it's not racist. Yeah. It just keeps going and going and going.
I would love to actually have somebody on to talk about what's really happening specifically actually with these four congresswomen, because I'm a little confused about whether it's the fact that they are actively seeking attention, that the attention is going to them constantly, or that they're not. And this is just, they're being targeted constantly. So it seems like there's always something, some stories swirling around them.
Well, any representatives don't want attention. Like that's like standing out in a big crowd is always hard to do for important. New Congress people. So they are naturally trying to get attention and stand out. And because they are young, not white women, Fox News is happy to give attention. And that in turn causes other outlets to cover them. So they get a disproportionate amount of attention.
Do you think, though, I'm like, how does this bode for like their political careers? This is what I'm wondering. I mean, like, is this the kind of thing that will cement their careers as like, you know, being real, you know, get it done, do not give a fuck type of, you know, legislators that just, you know, work against the machine? Or are they going to be like one term legislators because of all
this? That'll depend on like what kind of politicians they are. I think AOC in particular, I think she will use this to cement her career. I'm less confident the others are going to be long-term fixtures in Congress.
I think Ayanna Pressley might.
She might.
Yeah. the two Muslim women, not so much. But let's see. Let's keep an eye on it.
So all I think the tension is definitely, it's that alone won't make their career. But AOC especially knows how to use that to get her own message out and actually get her job done.
Right. I mean, we see her so much, like featured in, like, you know, in the hearings and all, you know, actually the attention she's getting is much broader than just these attacks. And that's what's going to serve her career.
And she's causing that to happen too. That's deliberate on her part. So she's definitely learning how to use this to her advantage.
Yeah. All right, Susan, thanks so much. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in this week. And we'll be back in 7 days.
See you then, Rabia.
Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.